Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Saturday, February 2nd, 2002. In the fireside room this evening is Barbara Rossing. Today's session number is ROB 2002-01 and it's entitled Summer Theme Kickoff. Let's listen in.
Hey everyone, this is the Reverend Dr. Barb Rossing, who is a longtime Holden person, who started as a waitress, I think.
Yeah, and then laundry.
And
all right.
Gradually worked her way up to village pastor.
And waitress still, yeah.
Was one of the times before that she was a teaching staff coordinator, I was a teacher.
Was that 1990 with Dan Spencer?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And what else is important about you? You went to...
That's enough.
She's here.
Okay, well, she teaches. Yeah. That's kind of important. Mm-hmm. At the Lutheran Seminary in Chicago. And we're really looking forward to a fun summer. And you can take it away from
there. Okay, thanks. Yeah, I teach New Testament at the Lutheran School of Theology at Chicago. And this year also, the year coming up is our 40th anniversary as a seminary. And so the president was sitting around about 6 months ago with the faculty executive committee that I'm on, and he said, okay, the 40th anniversary of the Lutheran School of Theology coming to locate in Hyde Park in fairly inner city Chicago is coming up. Should we do anything about it or not? Because, you know, 40th anniversaries, it's hard to know, but since, you know, 50ths are the biggest deal. But what we realized in thinking about it is that it's 40 is a much more important number biblically than 50 is, if you want to go by the numbers. And that indeed, I'm delighted to be in on Holden's 40th anniversary celebration this year, and especially this summer, and hope you are too, as I think we can have a lot of fun with it. So I thought I'd start by just asking you, what are some of the famous biblical 40s that you can think of?
40 days and nights.
Of rain, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
When the flood, yes, with Noah, it rained for 40 days and nights. So right away, that's starting out with that number. And others?
40 days in the wilderness.
Uh-huh. The Jesus temptation, right? Yeah, that certainly an echo of the Old Testament wilderness wanderings for 40 years is the fact that Jesus in the in Luke and Matthew went into the wilderness and had this temptation experience, and it lasted for 40 days. Uh-huh. And that's what Lent is based on. We're coming up on this next Sunday, not tomorrow, but the next Sunday is Transfiguration Sunday, and then Mardi Gras and Ash Wednesday. And Lent is 40 days, not including the Sundays, is a reflection of both Jesus' 40-day temptation and the 40 years in the wilderness. Any other famous 40s?
It rained for 40.
Uh-huh.
So many rainstorms.
Yeah, but that's a good one. Well, that's probably enough. Anyway, I think in a lot of ways, 40 is the defining number for God's people. And I think it can be a really fun number to celebrate at Holden. In fact, one of the teachers we have coming up this summer, Gail Ramshaw, Miriam's mother, right? Is Miriam here? Is she out of the village?
She's out.
Okay, she's out. Anyway, her mother is just doing a book on the biblical theme of 40. And taking 40 different images for God and for God's relationship with us. So she's going to be teaching the third week of June during Board Week, and I think that'll be a great sort of kickoff to the theme of 40 as well. So and actually, I'm told that the theme, 40 Years in the Wilderness, started as a joke. Does anybody know that for sure? I think I heard that it was... I think it was proposed by Michael Pellett at the board meeting last summer as kind of, oh yeah, I suppose you should do 40 years in the wilderness. But then the more we thought about it, the more we realized it's got that wonderful kind of, at least a double entendre, maybe even more, that Holden is located right next to a wilderness area, and we've been here for 40 years. So, you know, it's kind of a straightforward. Is that right, Janet? Can I just ask, was the theme 40 years in the wilderness first proposed as a joke by Michael Pellett?
No, Fred Niedenhoff.
Fred, okay.
I mean, Fred Niedenhoff,
okay. Anyway, so it's, you know, a statement of fact that Holden's been around 40 years in the wilderness. But the other thing that's so wonderful about it is it's the defining experience in a lot of ways for the Old Testament people of God after the Exodus. And that's what Dan Erlander's book here is about, the whole history of God's unfolding promise to men, the entire universe. But he takes the theme of manna, which is what happened, of God's gift of abundance in the wilderness, as kind of a an entree into the whole story of God's people in the Bible. And I think in a wonderful way, that theme of manna and abundance, God's grace, gets picked up throughout the whole Bible, Old and New Testament. The feeding stories, for example, in the Gospels, it's the most commonly told story. It's told twice in Mark's Gospel, twice in Matthew's Gospel, and then it's also in Luke and John. So there's six occurrences of that really, really important story where there was enough food for everybody. And I think that's a theme that first gets developed in the wilderness story when the Israelites are grumbling that they don't have enough to eat, and that, and then God provides manna. So that will be an important aspect of our theme this summer too. We chose, I don't think we've settled on one theme verse yet, but I think in some ways the book of Deuteronomy can be a theme book, although we'll draw in a lot from Numbers. And it's too bad because I'm a New Testament scholar and this isn't my area of total expertise, but the story of the wilderness gets picked up a lot in the New Testament as well. I was just looking at a verse from 1 Corinthians 10, for example, where Paul writes, "I don't want you to be ignorant, brothers and sisters, that our ancestors were all under the cloud, the pillar of fire and the pillar of fire by night and the
cloud.
That we just sang about in the Vespers, all passed through the sea, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all drank the same spiritual food, all drank the same spiritual drink, for they all drank from the spiritual rock that followed them. And the rock was Christ." So this is hearkening back to the story in the wilderness of Moses striking the rock and water coming out. It's a wonderful story that then gets picked up by the early Christians as an image of Christ. And that's a lot of what happens with the stories of the wilderness wanderings as they get picked up in the Christian tradition as well. The book of Deuteronomy, let me just say a little bit about it. It's, in a way, it's organized around a wonderful fiction, written a lot later, we think, but it's set as being Moses' big speech as the people of Israel are about to enter the Promised Land. And if you turn in Dan Erlander's book to Graduation, this is his drawing of Moses giving the speech. I think it's on page 16. Yeah. Chapter 5 is Graduation and Settling Down. And this is where he brings in the book of Deuteronomy, what he calls the graduation ceremony that takes place at the boundary on the east side of the Jordan River at the end of the wilderness school. People are about to cross the Jordan River there. And Moses, you can see in his little podium here, his pulpit, is giving his farewell speech, which is, "When you become landed, live as wilderness people." That's the way Dan sums it up. And in fact, if you haven't seen this book before, I hope you'll really like it. It's Dan Erlander's inimitable style, where he uses cartoons to teach profound theological teachings. So it's not a hard read at all, although it's not typeset. It's not, he drew and wrote the whole thing himself. But anyway, the book of Deuteronomy is set at the boundary of the Promised Land as people are about to cross over and settle down. And Moses' whole speech is, at the end of these 40 years, "Don't forget who you are as God's people." The years in the wilderness were supposed to be the schooling for the future, the schooling for the Promised Land that people needed. And that in the wilderness, they learned everything they would need to know. They learned lessons of sharing, of community, of manna, of abundance, of being faithful to God. And that's what Dan leads us through in this study book, and that the book of Deuteronomy talks about it as well. Interestingly, Moses himself, you probably already know this, never gets to enter the Promised Land because he was disobedient at one point. God tells him that he doesn't get to go in, he just gets to look from afar. And I think that can be a helpful image to us too, that sometimes we don't get to experience what other people do. And that too can be important spiritually. There's a wonderful sermon by Joseph Sittler, who used to teach in Chicago, called The View from Mount Nebo, where he talks about how he himself has never felt that he's had a really powerful experience of God as personally present in his life, but he knows that other people do. And he likens that to the view from Mount Nebo, where Moses got to look at something from afar, but he himself never got to experience the promised land. And that's part of the story of God's people as well. So, but we share in one another's experience. The experience of community is what happened also in the wilderness, and that Moses calls them back to. So let me just highlight what I think are a couple themes of the wilderness wanderings that can be helpful to us as we think about Holden's 40 years. And I think perhaps the most important one is that Moses, when he's giving this speech at the boundary now, and he tells them to remember the 40 years, it's not just for the sake of nostalgia or remembering all the fun times we've had together. And I think it's really important for us with Holden's anniversary also not to just look back and reminisce. But it's looking back in order to recall the lessons that God has been teaching them all those years. And hopefully, even in your time at Holden, however brief or long it's been, you too have been learning some of those lessons during your time in the wilderness here, however long it's been. The lessons that Dan talks about, and he's got this wonderful page here, 8 and 9, sort of a chart. Oh, no, it starts on 7. Are what he calls the manna lessons that then he's going to come back to over and over. This is chapter 3, the wilderness school. When would the wilderness instruction begin? God, the teacher, waited and waited for teachable moments. A moment came when the people grumbled about food, and Yahweh responded by showering them with some edible substance called, what is it? Ma-na in Hebrew means, what is it? And the people woke up and it was spread all around the ground. I was talking to Dan Erlander, how can we celebrate this at Holden this summer? He said, how about oyster crackers? So maybe we just strew those all around. Or he said, you know, oyster crackers coming out of the trees. I don't know. But and of course, nobody knows what manna looks like, because that was the thing. People had to ask, what is it? This wondrous thing. But Dan's got this great chart here of what happened in the manna event and then the lessons that God wants people to learn. Of course, God gave it every day. The people gathered manna each day. So Dan has a lesson here. Work is the dignified activity of helping God meet the needs of all people. And certainly work is a big part of what we're about at Holden Village. And then one of the most wonderful lessons here is that third one at the bottom there, is that God gives daily food so that hoarding is unnecessary. Food is for all, not just the big deals. God gives enough. All can therefore live in sufficiency. Another text we're going to work off of this summer as well is an article that Walter Brueggemann, an Old Testament scholar, had in the Other Side magazine in the November-December issue that was a really powerful one called Enough is Enough. And he too talks about this lesson of sufficiency and abundance. And to me, I think that's one of the most important things during my years as a waitress and laundry, working at Holden. I started coming here in 1973. And it's just that sense of grace that is so much bigger than what you'd expect. Unexpected grace that happens at crucial moments, like when you're working a terrible shift in the dining hall, and then all of a sudden some wonderful angel appears to help, and where volunteers pitch in and things like that. I mean, I really think that that's what Holden does best, is ingrain into people the sense of grace and of abundance. And that, let me just read a quote here from Brueggemann. Because it has to do, it's a very profound notion, I think, of economy. What manna teaches us is so different from the way the world works economically, that can be one thing that we pull into the theme as well. We live in a world where the gap between scarcity and abundance grows wider every day. Whether at the level of nations or neighborhoods, this widening gap is polarizing people, making each camp more and more suspicious towards the other. But the peculiar thing, at least from a biblical perspective, is that the rich, the ones with the abundance, rely on an ideology of scarcity, while the poor, the ones suffering from scarcity, rely on an ideology of abundance. How can that be? The issue revolves around whether there is enough to go around. And the biblical affirmation Brueggemann argues is of abundance, that there is enough. From the first chapters of Genesis, God not only initiates abundance, calling forth plants and fish and birds and animals, but promises continued abundance. And then this continues through the Exodus story and then again in the wilderness. This is what Brueggemann writes about the manna. There in the wilderness, bread inexplicably appears. A fine, flaky substance comes down, answering Israel's risk with a manifestation of God's faithful generosity. The bread violates all their categories, because of course the grumbling that leads to it is answered by this, but it violates all the categories of Israel. It overturns their conviction about scarcity. It cancels their anxiety about hunger. The gift of bread transforms the wilderness, and from that point on, Israel would entertain the thought that a place of perceived scarcity may turn out to be a place of wondrous abundance. And then Brueggemann talks about how this is picked up in the New Testament, but hopefully that's some of what we can communicate this summer, this idea that even when we and the world perceive scarcity, that God transforms our thinking to realize the world is a place of abundance. There is enough. One of the things Erlander will talk about in this book is that we all have the Egypt ideology ingrained into our heads. That's what he calls the kind of idea of hierarchy and domination. He's got a picture of it on page 4. That when Israel was enslaved in Egypt, that what they were being told over and over was that this is the way things are, this is the way it always will be, where there's a top-down kind of hierarchy, a sort of trickle-down economy where the Pharaoh sits on top and then everybody else, you know, in different tiers down from that. And that this is what the world still continues to teach us, that this, what he calls the Egypt way. And of course we have to be careful. I mean, I think my colleagues and friends who are experts on the Middle East and stuff, I mean, that we don't want to stereotype categories today of Egypt. And I actually am going to bring up a number of teachers this summer doing issues in the Middle East. We have to watch out for what it sounds like when you pull this into the present time. But the idea of domination and hierarchy, Dan talks about, is ingrained in all of us, and it was ingrained in the heads of the people of Israel when they were slaves, and we need to relearn a whole different way of being together, and that's what the wilderness school can be for us, is to learn a different way of being God's people that doesn't rely on an ideology of scarcity or hierarchy. Another person who talks just a little bit differently, but I think importantly that way, is Ken Buttigan, whose work we've used on nonviolence sometimes up here. And he talks about how we're all schooled in violence 101. It's being taught to us every day on the television with the war going on, with the way kids grow up learning that violence is how the world works. And we've all been to school in violence 101, whether we like it or not. So we need to unlearn that and learn a different way of nonviolence and peace. And I think similarly, it's just being ingrained into us constantly, this ideology of this Egypt economy. And we need to unlearn this as we go back to the wilderness school to learn from God again. So Dan's picture of the wilderness school is kind of a wonderful one on page 6. And I guess our hope, our dearest, most fondest hope is that this can happen to us this summer, is that in our 40th year at Holden here, that we can all go back to wilderness school, just like these people sitting at their desks here on the wilderness. Today's lesson, living as free people. You know, you got the sign going back to Egypt. He has all these little creatures here, you know, are we being graded? No, it's pass, fail. They have to be taught how to live. Yeah, they're only human. But anyway, that whatever shape that's going to take, and I think on each work crew it'll be different, you know, that hopefully everything that we do this summer, as the way we structure our work, the way we structure our study, our worship, and our celebrations, can be helping one another go back to wilderness school. Or maybe you've never been to wilderness school before, and we all need to relearn it over and over to learn what it means to be God's people. What are some of those lessons? We thought about adding different words into the theme. I guess if I would have added anything into the theme, it would have been 40 years of grace in the wilderness. I do think that lesson of grace or of abundance is such a key one that Holden or any Christian community needs to offer to the world. Hopefully you found that in your life here and are going to discover it again. And manna can be one organizing term to put that together. Another possibility that we thought of was 40 years in the wilderness together, putting that word on to emphasize community. And I think that also has been one of the key learnings that Holden has offered, and hopefully people will take home from this summer as well, what it means to be community. Community with those we disagree with, community who support one another, that we can be Christ for one another. Nobody has to be a lone ranger kind of person up here, but you can really support one another and learn the gift of community. That's a lot of what this book is about, and community in the wilderness. And I think we're going to be having study groups among the volunteer staff, is that right, or different things. So to really... if you think about your own time at Holden, how you've learned community, or what kind of a learning experience it's been for you, I think it comes in these sort of aha moments, glimpses of community as we work together. But it also can happen in things like Bible study groups or prayer groups, and that hopefully people really have that experience together. And we're going to bring up a number of teaching staff whose expertise is in areas of community and community organizing. One early in June, or mid-June, will be Jody Kretzman in Chicago, and then others throughout the summer, a guy from Seattle named Bill Grace, and others. Schooled in community that is a contrast society to the world. I think it was during the 80s that we used to, or 70s and 80s, used John Howard Yoder's book, The Politics of Jesus, that really talks about how the community that we're called to in the gospel is so different from what the world offers, and that's part of what we need to be about here at Holden. That's what the Israelites were learning in the wilderness also, was how to be different. Now, one of the dangers of that is a kind of conquest mentality, and I think Dan handles that pretty well. I mean, that's the dark side of the book of Deuteronomy and leading into entering the Promised Land, is that people were told to conquer. And that's, I guess, in keeping with this theme, part of what I really wanted to do with bringing people who have expertise on the Middle East is to talk about current issues in the Promised Land, current issues of whose land is it? Because obviously some of, if we take the Bible directly and apply it to Israel today, then there's questions of the Palestinians, just as there were questions of the Canaanites in the Old Testament, and why was Israel told to kill them all? And I think we have to critique some of what is biblically given as far as the ideology of conquest. And that can be part of what we're about, I think, is learning a lesson of community that doesn't include that sort of superiority complex, but looks to be a servant people and doesn't buy into some of what happened with the conquest.
So is there anybody that's coming up in Old Testament that can directly address that? I know I talked to you about that once, and it still chaps my hide, mm-hmm. That notion of killing them all.
And who are
and
you,
it's there.
May I ask? Okay, all this introduction, this is Lauren. Actually, I've told him that he's not supposed to talk in my glasses.
I couldn't help it.
No, I think that's a really important question. And I'll just say, as a New Testament scholar, this is, I think, one really important area where biblical archaeology can help us a lot. I've spent a lot of time in the Middle East with archaeologists there. And there's really no archaeological evidence whatsoever that the conquest ever happened, which is, I think, comforting. Jericho didn't fall down like that. I mean, we don't have evidence of mass slaughter or of ethnic cleansing or anything like that. Rather, Dan talks about this a little bit, his understanding of how the conquest happened, and I think this is a reasonably good read from the archaeological evidence on the bottom of page 17. that probably most of all, what was happening was that former slaves from Palestinian cities and former slaves from Egypt, that is the Israelites, became one family together. That people who were already living in the hill towns of Canaan, the land, there joined the slaves who came from Egypt, and that people lived much more peaceably together than the Bible would lead us to believe. But we should address that directly. The Old Testament people coming, actually, the Bible people are more New Testament than Old Testament. We can totally work on that. Bob Ekblad is coming from Old Testament.
Rabbi Marx
is coming during the third week of June. But that's a really important question. Ask him that. Schooled in community, I think, that is a worshiping and studying kind of community. We had a meeting in Seattle in November, the first weekend in November, where that pulled together a bunch of current and former volunteers to talk about this 40th anniversary theme and what we might want to do with it. And I guess one of the images that really kind of struck me was articulated by Ann Cohan, who, when I was a waitry in 1974, she was my supervisor. Back then, we were highly structured. We had to wear these little gold wraparound skirts, one size fits all. We had to bring a bunch of white blouses. Marcia, I don't know if you write to people now and say that, but anyway, Warner wrote to us and said, if you're going to be a waitress, you have to bring white tops, and we had to change into our outfits every day, and people would hold their platters up in the air, and we'd have to bring them seconds and stuff. But anyway, Ann was my supervisor, and she said at this meeting, she said what her one of her favorite images that Holden was how, even as waitry, there was a sense that everybody was caught up in theology, scooped up by the theology that was so exciting and so important in our study life. And then Ellen Gamrath, the former board chair, said also, yeah, everyone was equal theologically, so you felt you really could speak up, and that was important. And Anne talked about how as waitry, or everybody arriving in the village, you were told even in advance, get a copy of Dietrich Bonhoeffer's Life Together and read it. And she said, and we were expected to be able to understand it, but of course it was theology. But it was kind of wonderful, this sort of egalitarian notion that everybody can understand theology and be a theologian. And I think that's what we really want to get at this summer as well, that by having the gift that we give to volunteers be a book, by having study groups, that we can underscore that part of learning the wilderness school and being God's people is studying and worshiping together. And I certainly found in my own study life, as I struggled to get through a doctorate that took me a lot longer than I expected, that studying with other people is a lot easier. To have a study group and to have other people that you get through tough material together, however difficult this book is or not, that to just do it in a group can be a really wonderful thing. And I still rely on my group of people that got me through my doctorate. So hopefully we can do a lot of that together. And I just really like that image of everybody being scooped up in theology. I hope that'll really happen. And this vision will be exciting enough that it'll carry us. One other thing I think that's interesting about this theme, and it's not particularly highlighted as far as I can see in Deuteronomy itself, but I want to work on this more, are the ecological possibilities, 40 years in the wilderness. I think this also is a really important thing that Holden has to give to the world now as a theological gift, that that creation itself has something to teach us, and the wilderness is our teacher here at Holden. Not that we're worshiping nature here, but it's one of the most incredible settings. And there's crucial issues facing our planet that being located so close to a wilderness area, Holden can help bring out as guests come up here. I mean, I remember last summer when David Carlson was doing sessions on global warming and said, for example, what are you going to do for electricity when there's no more glaciers, because the glaciers are melting because of global warming? Wow. Crucial questions. But everybody that comes here needs to grapple with those questions of global climate change and environmental and ecological issues that I think the wilderness part of that theme can really help us with. And that is, like I said, I don't know if this is going to be a theme verse, but it really struck me in reading Deuteronomy that there's this verse that sounds incredibly like Holden. So we use it as the lead verse here in the article that we wrote in the Holden newspaper. Actually, my colleague Kent Burgess wrote most of this article. I wish you could have met him. He was up here last August and intended to come up here when his daughter came on the January term. Erin Burgess, did you all know her? Okay. And he was going to come up with her for a couple days, but then he went to Elmer Witt's funeral instead over in Seattle. He was sad to have to choose, but that meant he couldn't come up here. But this is the verse from Deuteronomy 8, verses 7 through 9, and not the whole thing. But for the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land flowing with streams, with springs and underground waters welling up in valleys and hills, a land where you may eat bread without scarcity, where you will lack nothing. A land whose stones are iron and from whose hills you may mine copper. I have no idea why copper mining was part of Deuteronomy. I've never figured that one out, but I think it's kind of telling that that it's in there and that we can have fun with that. I hope we can have fun with a lot of the rest of this stuff too. I mean, another one of the verses I really like is Deuteronomy 8:4. The clothes on your back did not wear out, and your feet did not swell these 40 years. So I don't know if that has to do with the potty patrol or the costume or whatever, where all the clothes that never wear out go. But having fun with it, I think, is always an important thing with the Holden theme. And maybe I should just say a few words about work camp before opening it up. What we decided... Well, you've probably heard more about it than we have. I mean, it's just been this sort of unfolding idea that Kent and I kind of proposed in conjunction with some board stuff and an idea that was a few years old about maybe we could shut down the village for a whole summer because everything is falling apart and just repair things. So what work camp is hopefully going to be is 2 weeks in June when we don't shut down the whole village, but for those 2 weeks, everyone's going to be working and worshiping and studying and playing and celebrating together as we get some of the really important projects done. And the study is going to be led by Dan Erlanders. He takes us through this book. And hopefully, I think we're talking about having each day focus on a different theme of the wilderness wanderings. Some fun and funny and others profound. Certainly the water in the wilderness, the striking the rock and water coming out is a really important one that gets picked up then in the church baptismally and in the waters of life. Dan was suggesting, well, why don't we have a golden calf day? Because, of course, you know, the worshiping the golden calf was what led to people getting the Ten Commandments. That whole story. I don't know what we would do on Golden Calf Day, but maybe you can play around with some of these ideas. Other wilderness stories that are so important, Miriam, the sister of Moses and Aaron, her song in Exodus 15, and then some other stories about Miriam we can lift up. The manna story. I mean, we've got to figure out how to do manna here at Holden. I don't know... what it would look like or what form it would take. I did really press Dan on that, and he said, well, we used to use oyster crackers, so see what you can think. But the whole Red Sea and Exodus story is part of this as well. And then finally, coming into the promised land that happens after this graduation here, and I would assume we would do this the last couple days of work camp, maybe the 20th and 21st of June, the promise of a land flowing with milk and honey. I was talking to Dan about that, and he said, oh yeah, what we always used to do at Pacific Lutheran University, where he was a pastor, was give the students each a box of Honey Nut Cheerios, served with milk. And he said, well, I know we never order Honey Nut Cheerios at Holden, but maybe we could for this or something. But anyway, how can we act out the land of milk and honey? I mean, I think that's the question we all want to... play around with, is how to make these themes part of our life together, our work, our worship, our spirituality, is how to think about what it means to go back to wilderness school in all of what we do. And that work camp will be a place to try out some of those ideas as we move into the full summer. It'll be kind of an intense experience, I think, of community and of study that hopefully then we can take as a really strong grounding for the rest of the summer. So I'd love to hear your ideas, thoughts, questions. Themes like this really build. And I would say that I confident that you now, in your study these next several weeks, and in what happens here during the 40 days of Lent, will have better and more important insights into what this theme can mean than we from the outside will have. Because you guys, in a sense, are a community like Israel, going through this together and preparing for it. And I don't have community in the same way that you all do, so I am really eager for what is going to come out of Winter Community to work on this theme and to lift up elements of it that can be very transformative for people this summer. Questions, comments, responses? Well, what's anybody looking forward to in the theme? What have you thought of? Oh, good, art. What's it going to look like?
We'll talk about that later. What I love about the Deuteronomy text, about how it sounds so like Holden, if you read just before that verse, it talks about remembering back to the 40 years in the wilderness that God has been testing you, and God is, you've been through a lot of hard stuff, and you're not in the promised land yet, but you're being brought there. So in other words, this is not, Holden Village is not the promised land, but it may be a foretaste. It may be, it's like like Susan would say, the kingdom breaking through into the present moment in just this little glimpse of what is to come. And as surprising as that text is, it shakes you a little bit, and I love that. And that we're not saying that this is not the be all and end all, but this is the right direction. I really like that.
Thanks. Yeah, and I think we have to be really clear about that we're not saying hold us the promised land. And we are saying in some ways that it's the wilderness, but wilderness has the double sense biblically as well, that wilderness was a place of testing and a negative, very, very difficult experience for people, but it was also where they learned how to be closest to God, and that's why Jesus goes to the wilderness. And that's why God's people always go to the wilderness. So that too, the promised land and wilderness, we're neither one nor the other, but glimpses of both, hopefully. Thanks.
Fred Niedner did, actually it's written out, kind of tying together what Kristen's saying and what you're saying. I think this is one of the places his idea came from. He gave a reflection at a board meeting, and then I think delivered it as a homily somewhere, that Holden wasn't. It's in the wilderness. The wilderness can be a place where you can feel God, and Holden is not the kingdom of God, but it's not far off. And it's not far off was the phrase and the title of and we've got that all written out. So that's kind of a nice connection between those two things. Because how far, how far into the wilderness and unable to measure with any, earthly measuring sticks and all that sort of thing, but maybe through some spiritual ones.
Thanks. Yeah, and we don't want to be, I think the world says, it's impossible to live in manna terms or kingdom terms. And what we want to witness to is that you can. I mean, we're not yet, but it can be glimpsed. Thanks. And, Dan's got this wonderful thing in here about the people took manna with them then when they went to settle down, took a little jar as a remembrance of it, that they had to live differently. So that maybe we can think of things like that, too.
The tailings on it.
Not far off. What?
Get your tailings on it.
Okay. Thanks, Peter.
I think also with that whole thing about, I liked what you said about the kingdom being a place of, the wilderness being a place of struggle, but it was a place being closer to God. And I don't necessarily, maybe you weren't saying this, but I think that's one and the same, and it can be one and the same, and I think that Holden often is a place where people struggle with issues that might force us to become closer to God. You know what I mean? Like, some of the topics like the environment or what we do about poor people, that kind of stuff, can be a real struggle for people who live here through the winter and who come up with this. So I think
that's
In thinking about work camp, I know so many of the logistics are just starting to be thought about and everything, but I'm pretty excited about the idea of it because of the history and continuity that it brings, because for a lot of us, people who've been here 5 or 6 years have been here a very, very long time, because it's such a transitional place and there's not a real sense of continuity and, for any of us, a sense of the history of it. And so that kind of look back at what people did here 40 years ago and try to bring that into our own packed, busy summer, but really being intentional about it for a couple weeks is pretty exciting, just the idea of it. Also being realistic that there's so many details to be worked out and everything, but I think that'll help connect us with these 40 years because none of us have obviously been directly connected for very long. So I appreciate that.
Sort of going along with what you called Holden as a transition place, I like the potential that the verses have to point beyond Holden as well, that Holden is a place in the wilderness, but that there's many people are just moving through Holden on to a transition somewhere else. And not only could that promised land be in the future here, but I don't know if I'm making much sense, but I like the potential for to shift the focus to the outside world as well.
Yeah, thanks for that, bringing that up, because I think we really do need to do that, it's future-oriented, and it's thinking about what are the crucial issues that we and the church and the world face for the future, and then how can we help people go to school to get ready for that or whatever, get prepared. As a community, how can we live into that future? Thank you.
I have two interrelated thoughts. And one thing that strikes me about the wilderness text is also the mention of the covenant and the covenant that God made with the people Israel. And realizing that at Holden, in our own ways, whether we do it successfully or unsuccessfully, of our making covenants with one another here as community, that sometimes those covenants are long-lasting and others are just for one winter, but I hope that could be lifted up, is this idea of God making covenant with God's people, and we as people learn how to make covenant with one another. And the other thought was like the jars of manna that you discussed also in Joshua, and this has been a verse that has stuck with me since September 11th, is where God tells the 12 tribes of Israel to pick 12 leaders and pick up stones from the River Jordan and to take them with them so that in times to come, when their children ask, what do these stones mean to you, you can tell them. And with thinking about what Kent just said about carrying things and that we are a place of transition, and we might leave this place and not know the full story of this place, but I hope that this summer can be one where we stop long enough and hear what those jars of manna in 1960 meant, and those stones that were just first found here, and that when we leave here, we'll be able to answer to the generations to come what this place meant.
I think that it would be interesting also when I think of wilderness experiences or like the 40 years in the wilderness kind of struggling and like listening for God's call or like hearing things for a sense of call. I think of Holden in a way of like evaluating what has happened or how has Holden changed in 40 years and where will it be for the future. So I think a sense of vision. I'm not sure that, when you talk about, mission or vision statements, how does the 40 years, because certainly that has changed since the first time the people came here for work camp and to say, like, what will work camp be 40 years from now? I don't know. That's kind of interesting.
That's a challenge that the board is working on right now, and as they do that, in many ways, it's not very much, very different.
Yeah, so I was just going to say that too. It's amazing how little it changes.
There's so many things as you look, as we start looking back at old documents, at old minutes from board meetings, and old program newspapers and the like. A lot of the questions are the same year after year in the village, and it's interesting to kind of move into kind of say this time and say, okay, what does it mean for the next 40 years or even 5 years in the context of this framework of questions? And the board is really doing some work on that right now, and I know Diane and I are thinking a lot about that, looking for other people's ideas too. So.
I think that one of the things that Holden offers so well, in my experience, is the hospitality. And that's one of the things that I see as one of the graces that you had mentioned, that, you know, that we have to offer and that people can take away in a little jar.
Oh, thanks.
And it's certainly something that I've experienced too.
Pretty intensely.
And, you know, I would say I've been over the... how long has it been since 1974 now? I guess I've been coming here for about 30 years. Is that right? Is that what it adds up to? I think the changes I've seen, to me, Holden has been getting better. I think the worship is better now than when I was pastor.
Oh,
wow. No, it is. It is. I think that the hospitality is better. I mean, well, just what you mentioned, I don't know your name.
Tom.
Okay. I mean, I really think it's being done better. I think stuff is better in the dining hall than it was when I was a waiter. I don't know why we had to get everybody their seconds and why they couldn't go up there and why we had to wear those outfits. And I think the buffet breakfast is a lot better. We had to pour juice for everybody and you had to sit down at breakfast at a set time. I mean, I think so much is better. The one thing we are really interested in working on, I think, is getting back to being, in some ways, a studying community also, where volunteers... feel a sense of ownership of the program. I think that's been a shift that maybe hasn't been for the better. And so one thing I guess, just in closing, to invite you all is especially during work camp, we're only going to have basically two teaching staff. It's going to be Dan Erlander and Marty Haugen, a Bible study and a musician.
Yeah.
Well, there's going to be a lot of the rest of us who are former teaching staff, but who are going to be on work crews. But hopefully, and then we're deliberately trying to do teaching staff slightly leaner during the summer as well, so that volunteers will feel more empowered to lead sessions, to offer program, and that the more we can mix program staff and volunteer staff, or whatever you want to call people, I think that's the magic of Holden that I really would like to somehow get back to again. I think so much is really better than it's ever been. But the more that volunteers can feel like this is a learning community, and that teachers can feel like it's a working community, and that we can all be in it together, I think that's what we need to go back to Wilderness School together to get. In my opinion, that's the one thing that I think, when I hear the stories, you know, of the olden times, that I want to work on getting back. So I just invite you to think of what is it you would want to teach if you were teaching a session. Because during work camp, the evening sessions especially are going to need to be all of us. We want to do one session every week during the summer as an open slide projector where people bring their old slides or their new slides or whatever. But there can be a lot of other points at which volunteers can also become teachers and vice versa. So be thinking about who are the teachers in our midst and what is it that needs to be raised up, and how can you as work crew leaders also work with your staff, you know, to say, okay, you know, we're the lawns and gardens crew, you know, we generally work through the morning, but so-and-so really wants to go to that 10:45 session, so, you know, I want to go to that too. I'll free you up. I mean, that if you can model what it means to lift up study is really important to your work and view it as part of what our work is about, that would be, I think, the greatest thing that you could do to help the program. And we, in turn, as teachers, will pitch in more, I think, than sometimes has been the case. So I'm looking forward to it.
So before we quit for this hour and thank Barb, this whole idea of us claiming the program is what these next three Monday nights are about. That's the first step now. I've used this book before in churches I've served, and I really love it. And it's, Barb just focused on the 40 years in the wilderness, but this little comic book is the whole Bible from Genesis to Revelation. And it's a wonderful overview for us all to get back in touch with our biblical heritage, or maybe learn about it for the first time. You can probably read the whole book in a couple hours. We're going to take three Monday nights, 7:30, to meet as a community. We'll all be reading the same book, but we're going to let everybody break up into their own interest groups. So those are the sheets that are up on the scheduling bulletin board. One of them is environmentalism, one is Christian spirituality, one is community building, one is personal growth. There's an arts one, there's a group specific to Holden.
Social justice.
Social justice.
Biblical reflection.
Pardon?
Biblical reflection, Bible study.
So go up and sign on one of those sheets. If you're in the group that John and I are hosting, try to read the first 20 pages this Monday night. There's also a place on that sheet. Some people have already put an H or an F as host or facilitator. And you're free to do that as well. So as you just met Mark, as you sign up, think about if you could host your group, or if there's already a host, you'll know where to go. Then what the second tier of this is as we go through this, these three Monday nights, at the end of that, we will report back at the community meeting that follows what sorts of discussion questions or perspectives we would like to bring to summer programming. There's going to be a new element this summer in that not only we in the winter community, but the summer short-term volunteers are going to get this book, and we're going to have discussion groups for them to build community. And those of us in the winter community, after we've gone through our 3 weeks, who feel called to be facilitators of those of those men and mercy study groups for short-term staff, can come forward to from our experience in these 3 weeks coming up to lead those discussion groups, help build community, and be a theological, all of us digging in to be theologians with the short-term staff as well. So this next 3 weeks is that first step. So on one level, it's us building community among ourselves as we just get to know each other in a new way through discussing this. And then the second tier of that same experience is preparing to facilitate and help short-term volunteers in the summer go through the same process. So just a reminder to sign up and on one of those interest groups, and go to where whatever name is in your group that has an H or a host. Mark, yes?
Those groups, are they merely affinity groups for this discussion, or are they, in fact, looking forward to the notion of the first of those 2 weeks of work and facilitating evening programs and so on? If I sign up to be in the arts program, the arts group, do you see what I'm
Yeah, I don't think we're clear on that yet, but that could be part of what you discuss. And as we, when we come back together as the winter community in the community meeting that follows these 3 weeks, we will talk about that and what's come out of the groups and how we want to form that. This is, you know, the process unfolds as it goes. There's no we don't know what's going to happen until we get there, kind of thing. Okay. Any other questions about that process, or are we ready to thank our?
Let me just ask again. So we're going to discuss on Monday, and then on that Wednesday we're presenting.
There's three Monday nights in a row.
So are there going to be three Wednesdays that we're?
No, okay, no. Three Monday nights in a row. At the end of that third Monday, think about how your group would like to present briefly to the community meeting that follows that third Monday night. And then that community meeting, there'll be a chunk of time set aside for what we got out of this, what we want to carry forward as a community programming situate, you know what I mean, for the summer staff, short-term staff.
And we can talk about this later, but I'll just point this out now, that I think that's the week when most of the, it's not.
No, it's not.
No, we
it's
cleared,
the week before.
We did it. Right. I think we cleared all those landmines of scheduling.
And all the facilitators will get a sheet that will have a lot of details and suggested questions on it. So there'll be a lot more details in the group.
And maybe some oyster crackers.
Yeah. Okay, let's thank our for a great question. Should also, the mystery man with the question is Lauren, who gave Barb this beautiful ring. They're about to go off and get pitched.
In a week from tonight. And by the way, I think there's been a lot of rumors flying around.
They're categorically not true.
Exactly.
Most of them.
I didn't
some
just meet
them.
Him on the trail, like people are saying. Although you two could meet somebody on a hike, but
how did it happen?
Well, time to go.
Well, we were with Kristen Delia.
Yeah.
In a class.